Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are joined today by my most esteemed guest to date. He is a play-by-play commentator on UFC Fight Pass, a play-by-play commentator for Bull TV, a play-by-play commentator for World Championship Sumo. He's also a host on Misfits Boxing. Most recently, I saw a host on Millions.com. He's also competed in a boxing bout at Misfits Boxing and even a Fury Pro grappling match. Ladies and gentlemen, ooh, Ben the Bane Davis. Am I missing anything, Ben?
You got the big ones, man. You got the greatest hits.
I absolutely love it. And I mean, first off, like, how's everything going? I mean, any big plans for the year? Has anything huge happened in life recently?
Lot of stuff in the pipeline, man. You know, this year, another Misfits boxing bout is on tap. Still working on date, place, opponent, all those different accoutrements. But we'll be back in the ring at some point. The broadcasting career is going swimmingly. No complaints. You know, this last 3-4 years has been a lot of setup, a lot of strategizing and positioning. And this year is kind of the fruits of the labor a little bit, you know, like last week was just doing Madison Square Garden, which was ridiculous to be able to broadcast from that venue. So feeling good, brother. Happy to be here.
Absolutely love it. And I've got a bunch of questions for you today. I'm also going to ask for some of your thoughts on UFC 300, some of the big fights that have been announced. But one thing that I know some of my friends were bringing up to me when I mentioned I was bringing you on is the Bane. Where did that beautiful nickname come from? Because it just flows. It flows so well.
It does, man. I am very lucky that it stuck. And I wish I had a better story. It came from a year of Twitch streaming. So when I was a junior at ASU, I wanted to get into content creation and initially was just doing like a gaming Twitch and was like, okay, Ben Davis is just not catchy enough, doesn't grab you enough. So I was like, I'll be the Bane. And originally it wasn't even Ben the Bane Davis. It was just the Bane. And after a period of time, integrated the full name and everything. And now it sticks. Usually you can't give yourself a nickname. I do, you know, you got to get the nickname from somebody else, but in my special scenario, I can't think of a better one.
Awesome. And I love how it's all your handles on all your social media. It makes it great to find you. I find that, you know, mine are kind of all over the place. So it's like seeing someone where it's like Ben the Bane Davis. I mean, and a great moniker, might add. If you ever going to professional wrestling, I mean, the Bane. Oh, how about that?
Dude, don't tickle me. Don't tickle me, Zach. I want to, man. Give me on AEW. Give me that NXT. I mean, come on. I'll be there.
Were you able to catch a WrestleMania at all? I think I saw you posting about that a bit.
I was prepping for APFC the first night of WrestleMania. And so I was doing my notes. I was able to catch the last section of the Rock and Roman versus Seth and Cody matchup. Thought that was great. Thought that was fun. Yes. And then, man, I mean, that second night finished the story. Come on, Cody Rhodes.
I mean, are you a pro wrestling fan yourself, I assume, at all?
When I was younger, way bigger. Huge when I was younger, man. Loved guys like Dolph Ziggler, big AJ Styles guy. But, you know, as time progressed, I just didn't have the time, energy to keep up to date. And there's so much. There's always so much that happens. So, like, I'll come back for specific things. Like, for Cody Rhodes, I was really interested in the story. The CM Punk stuff that's been going on between AEW and WWE when he came back. Like, I was deep in that. But I wouldn't be the guy to ask week to week on what's going down on SmackDown.
No, I agree with you. And I know for me, you know, I was a huge pro wrestling fan when I was younger. And as I got older, I got into UFC. And I kind of wonder if there's a correlation there between, like, the fake fighting and then getting into the real fight. Do you see that at all?
Absolutely. 100%. I think that there is a precedent where if you like WWE, then you will almost 100% of the time enjoy UFC as well. I think that for me, and I think we all have this moment when you're a kid and you realize that it's scripted and it's all predetermined. Dude, it broke my heart. It broke my fucking heart. I was like, you're telling me Shawn Michaels isn't actually sweet chin musicking these guys? Like, come on. But yeah, I mean, if you know, people like, but the thing is though, like, it doesn't go both ways. UFC fans usually shit on WWE, which I don't understand. It's fun. It's campy. It's, you have to be so fucking athletic to do anything in pro wrestling. Like, we should have an appreciation for it, but I wish both went both ways.
Yeah. And I kind of tell, like, you know, some of my buddies who are UFC fans that kind of hate on it is that just picture stunt actors. Like, they're stunt actors. What they're doing is real. You know, they're actually hurting themselves. It's scripted, but I mean, you're still feeling pain. You're feeling those hits.
Oh, yeah. Dude, like, look at Kurt Angle. That guy's body is held together by tape and band-aids at this point.
So many perks he's taking. Oh my gosh. So I know you, I think I saw in your bio that you graduated from ASU in 2022.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
What was your major there, if you don't mind me asking?
Dude, I did honors finance. So I did nothing even close to like media or broadcast journalism or sports, anything in sports. It was just finance because I wanted to go into business. Like I grew up acting and I was a drummer. I was on an improv troupe for many years and I was just very creatively engineered. But we all know that that doesn't really pay the bills. So following high school graduation, my belief was, let me go get a finance degree, or originally it was entrepreneurship, but switched to finance. Let me get like a stable job and, you know, the mold that I think a lot of people subscribe to. Yes. And I just found that that didn't really work for me. My junior year, I was pretty unhappy. And I could tell that if I graduated, if I continued down this path, then none of the ingredients in my, you know, cake here would change. I would still be baking the same fucking unhappy cake. So I was like, I got to change up the ingredients, baby. So pivoted and dropped out of like, I was very involved at WP Carey, which is the business school, dropped out of like almost every club, every extracurricular, and just focused on mixed martial arts. I was like, maybe I could put some eggs in this basket. Started with interviewing people, started some on-site coverage, Bellator, PFL. And I mean, long story short, just fell into this where I'm at now. It's been a lot of upward failing.
I know it's been great seeing you come up. I mean, I kind of just view it from a fan on Twitter and stuff on Instagram, but I mean, it's been incredible. So, I mean, that kind of does segue. So you kind of mentioned that, you know, that passion was always there for commentating. So who was it that first officially picked you up, like, or like to have you interview people, to have you talk to people?
That's a good question. I would say that my first gig was with this small media group called Tarpsoft Sports, which was a Canadian little team. And I was doing interviews for them. We were doing like some live streams. They initially, this is a funny story. I don't tell this one often.
Okay.
So Tarpsoft started a fight promotion called Tarpsoft Fight Club, TOFC. And this was back in 2019. So it was going to be my first commentary gig. And I was flown all the way out to Niagara Falls. I was very excited for it. But of course, 2020. Of course, COVID was going on. And so Canada was shutting down during fight week. And like day before the fights, we get this phone call at 3 a.m. from the local government. And they were like, yo, we can't hold your sporting event to the extent that you want. We can maybe do 200 tickets, but we were tracking for 1200, 1500. Like you know what I'm saying? So it'd be a huge pay cut. And ultimately it just didn't come to fruition, which honestly, is a good thing. Now, I don't shit on many people publicly, but that was going to be a terrible show. We didn't even have a fucking canvas. We didn't have a canvas, right? So we were like day before the fights, we're trying to scramble, call people to print this shit out. And it's just, there's so many issues going on behind the scenes. After the event get canceled, we go to the Fighter Hotel, which is a Best Western, the only Best Western in Canada. And it becomes my job and the matchmaker's job to tell the fighters that the event's canceled. I don't know how little old Ben the Bane Davis, the play-by-play, has to be doing this, because the promoter, we're Ubering there, and the promoter goes, man, I got a toothache. I got to go to the hospital. You kidding me? You fucking kidding me? A toothache? When did that happen? All week you haven't complained about this. So he goes to the hospital. Me and Jack was the matchmaker's name. We're going door to door. Fighters are pissed. It ranges from like deep sadness and frustration to like extreme anger. There was one guy, I forget his name, but he was literally cutting weight because it was, you know, about to do the weigh-ins. So he's like, gets out of the bathtub. He's shaking. He's like, no, man, it's okay. Like I got a pound to go. Like it's all right. And we're like, dude, the event's off. Like the entire event's canceled. It was heartbreaking, dude. I don't even know how to describe it. Harrowing. But our co-main event, this guy named Mike Imperato, who I think he's doing okay on the regional scene these days. I haven't kept up with his career, but he was deeply frustrated. And so he's like, why the fuck isn't the promoter here? Like, why am I hearing it from you guys? And the matchmaker was deep down on the other side. Now, the context is he was yelling at Mike's manager last night, the matchmaker. Ooh. And and so Mike was not happy. He was like, where the fuck is Jack at? Where's Jack? Jack's over there. It brings Jack over, bro. He's pointing into Jack's face. He's going, you fat fuck. You've never cut weight before. You know, you don't even know we're putting our bodies through. And Jack was like, yeah, man, I did high school wrestling. I know, kind of. And he's like, no, you don't. And it's insane. Gets worse. It gets worse. So the promoter comes back and he hears through this game of telephone that Mike Imperato was getting physical and pushing Jack. Did not happen. And so the promoter brings one of his fucking like like literally a Harley Davidson club member with this chain. He had a chain and a big padlock at the end of it. And they're walking up to Mike's room, and I was like, what the fuck are you guys going to do? You're going to beat him to death with a fucking chain and a lock? So, and Mike had and his team, they'd taken off after they'd gotten their checks. But yeah, this giant 6'6" ginger dude, I was like, what are you planning on doing right now? So it was a disaster of an event, but that was the first group that I was associated with and kind of like my first exposure to a commentary opportunity. It was a couple years after that was when I got my first in-person gig. But yeah, that was the Tarps Off Fight Club tale.
I absolutely love that. I mean, I always love hearing when, you know, you see where you're at now. You're on UFC Fight Pass, you're on Misfits. So then hearing stories like that where they're saying essentially their newest member to go tell a bunch of grown men, hey, you're not going to make any money tomorrow. You're not going to fight.
I was 19, bro. Like, I was a kid. what was I going to do?
Oh, my gosh. But actually, you know, speaking of fighting, I mean, fighter yourself. I'm very curious to hear, what is the regiment like? What is the training routine? The difference between, like, you know, you're doing boxing and you did a grappling matchup. Is there a difference in how you're training for those?
Wish I could tell you. I don't know. No, it's like the thing is, both of them came on somewhat short notice. So the grappling, I had 5 days. And the understanding going into that was I was going to get subbed immediately because, you know, Brad Bolton, he's the CFFC president, he's a legit fucking black belt. Like him and Clay Guida grappled for 7.5 minutes. And Brad had like 2 hours notice for that matchup. And he had Clay in the same straight ankle lock. Mm-hmm. I will say that he had Clay in the same spot, but CFFC grappling shows you can't submit UFC fighters by those methods because it could injure them, you know. So I was like, he had Clay. Me and Clay both got subbed by Brad effectively, but only one of us had a protected rule set. But yeah, I mean, for that, I had 5 days notice. I was coming back from a karate combat show and was like, why not? I'm free. It'd be fun. Good exposure. Like getting to be on Fight Pass as a competitor is always a good time. And like, again, in situations where it's kind of a win-win, like I don't have pressure on my shoulders. I did 9 months of grappling 6 years ago. Like what the fuck do people expect me to do? Now I thought it would go a little longer. I thought it would go a little bit longer. But yeah, the Misfits boxing one was weird. That was about 3 weeks notice. I was in New York for PFL doing media and got the call, and it was a 2-minute phone call. And this is my advice to anyone that is like trying to get opportunities. Don't even give a fuck what industry it's in. If that door comes open an inch, bang right through it. Guess how long that phone, it was 2 minutes, right? Hey, it's Gabe Silva Anderson's kid. Great. Here's how much. Cool. Here's the weight. Awesome. Here's when. Great. Here's where. Please, let's fucking go. Boom. That's it. Say yes to everything. You might get, I don't want to say taken advantage of, but you know, opportunities don't come around often, right? And someone else is going to take it. So I was like, yes, I don't have much boxing experience, really none. But yeah, I'll go fucking fight him. Why not? Because I knew I was going to dominate him in the fight week. I knew that, like the press conference, all the media and whatnot leading up to it. I was like, he's got no chance. But in the ring, I was like, well, now I'm fucked. It is what it is.
So did he have real issues before that fight? Or was that all you just being an excellent seller of that fight?
That was just me. Yeah. Him and I didn't know each other beforehand. You know what I'm saying? Like, he had no clue who I was. So I just annoyed him so much during the buildup. And I think the press conference is what really frustrated him. But think about it. Like if you're fighting somebody and everything you say, that guy's got a better response than you, you'd get frustrated. Like you'd be annoyed. So, and the thing is, like, I don't know if I could replicate that quality of trash talking against like a B Dave or another Misfits boxer, because it's like, what do I say, you know? But against Anderson Silva's son, dude, you gave me all the ammunition in the world. Like, what are you doing here?
They already don't expect much out of you since it's Anderson Silva's son. They just associate greatness with him.
Straight up. And so that's why I'm like, you're on an influencer boxing show. Go fight like actual fighters, dog. Like, what the fuck are you doing here? This is weird.
No, and I always see this on your social medias, people trolling you going, I'm so glad he got knocked out. They see your highlights. To me, it seems like you can feed off of that. It just doesn't even offend you. And if anything, it's just more exposure.
There's like two schools of thought with it. You know, no PR is bad PR. If people are talking about you, mentioning your name, then that's good. But you know, the other side of it is like, I'm a human being. No, like, I've got bad days. Dude, you catch me on a bad day, oh, my God. Twitter's the worst place in the world if you're having a bad day. But, yeah, you know, that's par for the course. I think, like, if you're putting content out there, you're putting your face out there, and you're taking risks by doing things, you have to understand and make peace with the fact that there will be people like that that will troll you. And, you know, my response is very, like I said, some days I respond to it better than others. But at the end of the day, like, my rationale is always, like, okay, people can post me getting knocked out, post me getting subbed. But at the end of the day, like, what are you doing? Like, you're on the sidelines not doing anything. I'm mixing it up. Even though I'm losing all the time, I'm still in there. So that's, I guess that's always my internal justification.
Mm-hmm. Keeping on the fighting track. I mean, most I've been out of the country is Mexico. I saw you just went to Thailand, looked amazing. What was some of your favorite experiences from being in Thailand?
Man, so second time in Thailand, second fight circus show. And genuinely, this is going to sound like such a touristy answer. The beaches of Thailand are so good, dude. The beaches in Phuket are ridiculous. They look like postcards. Like, I was able to spend like a good hour, 2 hours one day just sitting out, eating cucumbers, had a beer with me, just enjoying and being present. I think that's one thing that I fail to do often when I'm on the road is like really be in the moment. And thankfully with Fight Circus, and specifically this last show, there was a bit of downtime. So I was able to just like walk around, take in the scenes. But yeah, Thailand's crazy. Elephants, a lot of elephant riding going on there. We were next to, this is not a good one to put on the record, but we were next to this, our hotel was right across from this place called Bangla Road, which was where like the sex tourism capital was. Mm-hmm. If you know Thailand, you know that it's the lady boys and prostitution. They're very founded. But yeah, so it was weird when we'd be walking like back from the venue because the girls would like literally be grabbing you, trying to, you know, get you over and drop your bot on the ladies. But yeah, so that was weird. I'm a taken man, so I'm happily in a relationship. So all that, I was like, nah, that's for our I don't want to say this, but our DJ, he had a good time. he had some fun.
Oh my goodness. I saw you were at a Tiger Muay Thai, one of the most established, Muay Thai gyms in the world. What was the experience like there? That seemed incredible.
Dude, that, and honestly, that would have been a much better answer than the beaches. Tiger Muay Thai was fantastic. Like, TMT is one of the coolest spots for a martial artist, for someone that wants to get better at striking. Like, they have a compound, bro. I can't even describe the fucking size of the building. They were doing yoga classes, right? You live there, you do yoga, you fucking eat there. Like, it's a full all-in-one just training extravaganza. Some of the best instructors you'll get. You know, you're walking by and they've got Piotr Jan, they've got Rafael Fiziev, they've got Valentina Shevchenko posters. Like, you're just in this excellent environment where the elite of the elite come and sharpen their swords. So, you know, we got to train with one of the guys and did just like a really, you know, rudimentary class, nothing too crazy. But you look around and it's guys just nonstop kicks on bags and the speed, and I talked to him. I went over and I was like, what brought you here? And it was this Swedish dude. And he was like, oh, I just wanted to come train. What? You know? Yeah. Like, but that's crazy. So there's so many people there that like just say, fuck it. And, you know, spend 2 months at TMT training, and Bang Tao, very same way. But yeah, the mixed martial arts scene in Thailand is excellent. Specifically, those gyms are really fun.
That's cool. Have you been to any others? Any other big name ones? AT&T, any like that?
I did. I was just at Extreme Couture. I've been to Syndicate and Couture in Vegas whenever I go there. I've never been to AKA. That's one that I've really been interested in visiting and popping into. Because obviously you hear about Cormier's and Khabib's and all of that at American Kickboxing Academy. But I don't know where the fuck they are. Where are they based? Where is it? Where is it? Who knows?
California, maybe? I don't even have a guess.
Good shot. I mean, it's a good shot.
No, do they just let you... like, do they have like day passes that you do that? Or do you have to sign up for certain classes?
Day passes, yeah. Okay. Like, you have to go in and organize it. Our guy that was kind of leading the group, he had sort of given us it was a long van ride from our hotel to where Bangtown, Tiger Muay Thai, we're stationed at. And our guy was like telling us the whole way, yeah, we're all good, man. Like, we've got it figured out. We get there, not the case at all. Not the fucking case at all. So we spent like a good 45 minutes to an hour just like standing outside as he's like going back and forth. We had to go in and meet like the manager of Tiger Muay Thai and explain what we were up to. Yeah, it was a full, I mean, it was a full thing. And we had a guy, his name was D-Lo, and he's like a 3 foot tall midget with us, and so we were just attracting a lot of attention. So, but yeah, no, it was I think you could roll in, just do day passes, but if you want that like extended stay, then probably organize it before you get to Thailand if you want to.
I figured. So were the people nice there, the locals at all?
So nice, dude. Everyone in Thailand's incredibly hospitable. I've never run into this personally, so I want to speak only from my experience, but I haven't run into crime, dude. Nobody's like pickpocketed me. Nobody's tried to rob me or mug me. Like, it's a very, very safe environment. Walking around in Phuket, I feel completely comfortable. I feel that same way in Colombia too. People like to talk about Bogota and Medellin as these like murder capitals and you're going to die. And it's like, yes, if you go to the wrong spots, but you go to Philadelphia and you go to the wrong spots, then same situation, yes. Right? So, but yeah, I think a lot of Americans have this weird skewed idea of foreign countries and the safety within them. And I'm like, dude, Phuket, the Thais just want you here, right? They're happy to see you, you know?
Absolutely love that. That's refreshing to hear. Cause I know all I hear is that like, hey, those countries are dangerous. Don't go there.
Yeah. No. And they're so cheap, dude. They're so fucking cheap. Like,
really? I figure.
It's like 33 baht to $1. You live like a king. You know what I mean?
I got to take a trip to Thailand then. That's
yeah. Awesome. Okay. Next time we'll get you to TMT.
That'd be fun. So what would you say has been, I don't really want to, you know, since you're under so many promotions, but what has been like your favorite event that you've been able to commentate for? And we'll say for this year, we'll just go for 2024 so far.
This year specifically, it's very hard to almost compare and like pick a favorite, but the beauty is because there's so many different industries, it's apples and oranges. You know what I'm saying? Like Misfits 12, I think that was a really cool one for me. That was January 20th in Leeds, England. That was the first Misfits show I'd done complete, you know, from start to finish, calling it. And I don't know, man, it was just one of those moments where I felt like, okay, the career is really coming a long way. I'm sitting next to Todd Grisham, who did WWE for 8 years, who has called a UFC event, who is the voice of Glory Kickboxing and so many huge fights around the world, boxing related. Like I at times feel imposter syndrome, but like that night was like, yeah, I've made it. I've earned it. I belong here. The sumo show that we just did at Madison Square Garden last weekend was kind of the same way. It was ridiculous looking around the theater at MSG and thinking I'm going to be doing play-by-play. I'm providing play-by-play here because just 7 months ago, a year and change ago, PFL was at the theater doing their, you know, championships. I was there covering it for media, you know, so I was on the opposite side of the coin that night and watching Sean O'Connell doing play-by-play and Kenny Florian and Randy Couture on the broadcast. And so now it was really cool just being on that opposite side. And like I said, I really don't reflect too much. There was one UFC fighter at Media Day at UFC 300 had a great answer about it. That's for later down the line. But there are moments where I'll sit and be like, that was a really cool experience.
Absolutely. That's so cool. And I honestly feel like from what I've been seeing from you lately, you are reaching that status where soon people are going to be meeting you and they're going to be going, oh, hey, guess who I just got to work with?
No chance. Give it a couple of years.
No, another thing I'm very interested about is how does someone like yourself, you know, big mixed martial arts guy, get involved with, you know, I guess sumo is a form of mixed martial arts. But I mean, with sumo and then you're doing bowling. I mean, is that just people seeing you doing the MMA stuff and they're going, hey, that guy would sound great covering our event?
No, I wish some of it is that. Yeah, Ro, they'll be like, hey, I heard you on APFC and we'd love to have you for this show. But for the bowling and sumo specifically, I'll break down the sumo one first. My buddy is helping them with some of their back end content distribution and they were looking for a play-by-play. He suggested me. This was back in November. Got the chance to meet with Mark and Noah Goldman, who's the owner, and they were like, "Yep, we'd love to hire you." And boom, Simple as, weird, came out of nowhere. It came out of fucking nowhere. Didn't even know that they were, you know, looking for somebody. And it was just a referral through a friend. The pro bowling one is a much more interesting story. I don't have any existing link or anchor into the world of bowling. I don't. I no family members, no friends, no contacts. But I, in 2021, saw it on the TV and was like, what the fuck is this? I was bartending at Harkins at the time, and I thought it was so funny to put pro bowling on when I was closing the bar, because people would come over and I'd be like, you see this shit? Fucking see this shit? And then I started watching it outside of like work and enjoyed it. And the commentary is really electric and fun. And I was just like, how do I get involved? So last year, they're doing the Players Championship in New Jersey. It was in Brunswick, New Jersey. And so I bought a plane ticket, booked a hotel, went on my own dime, and had reached out and had communicated a bit with the PBA beforehand. And so they knew I was coming. They were like, oh, hey, here's a pass. Love to have you. And I think they thought I was bigger than I am. I'm not that big, but they were like, hey, so we're going to put you on the TV and like, what do you want us to call you? And I was like, MMA commentator is good. And so they put me up on Fox, and it's a shot of me. And it is like a lower third that says Ben Davis, you know, MMA commentator. One of the fucking pro bowlers comes over. His name's Anthony Simonson. He's one of the best in the world. And he was like, hey man, like, I'm Anthony. And I was like, I know, I just fucking saw you bowl for like 2 hours. And he was like, I'm a huge MMA fan. He lives in Vegas. So he's showing me like all the times he's been to the Apex and T-Mobile and all that. Yeah, really, really cool dude. And so I just called, this is a little bit too much of a fast forward. I'll wind it back after, but I just called my second pro bowling show in Vegas at Suncoast, and Anthony was participating in it. And it was the US Open. Comes over, gives me a fist bump beforehand. I was like, oh, he remembers. But yeah, so after that Players Championship experience, I went out with a lot of the production team and just networked, man. I mean, it's all relationship building. You know, if you have good interpersonal skills and, you know, you connect with people and can build the relationships effectively, anything's possible. It took months. I mean, it took from May to October of messaging, following up, deepening relationships, to the point where they brought me out to Texas mid-October and were like, hey, we'd love to give you a job. And I was like, yes. Long time. That took a long time. But
man, paid off.
That it did. I'm actually heading to a bowling show. That's my next event that I've got. Me and my girlfriend have a wedding on the 19th, and then I head out like the next day for a bowling show.
Cool. I mean, how long do those usually last? I've never personally seen like a full one in like.
Dude, it's crazy because the Bowl TV side of things is very different from the PBA Fox FS1 show. So we're there for a week. Like, we're doing 8-9 hours a day of bowling broadcasting. So, dude, I sat through about 5,400 games of bowling at Suncoast the week that I was there doing the US Open. It's crazy. Because that's, you know, insane. And because it all leads, like, you do rounds of qualifying, then you do rounds of match play, and then you get like either a single or double elimination bracket, and then you do a stepladder final to determine 3, 4, 5 seeds on TV, and then boom, TV show. So yeah, it is a lot of fucking work, and you know, a bit of a throwing in the deep end. You know, I don't know bowling to the extent that the other commentators do on Bowl TV, and so I got kind of crucified by the fans the first day. Dude, they fucking hated me.
Wow.
I know. Yeah, which is like fair. I get it. Like, imagine if somebody came into a UFC broadcast and they started fucking up people's names. Like, they were calling Tom Aspinall, they were going, oh, Tommy Aspinell, you know, like you and yeah, I would probably be like, what is this guy doing here? So like, that's, you know, I fucked up someone's name, and he was the son of a Hall of Famer.
But also, that's just what people do. They see someone new to the scene. They want to pick out all the bad that they can see.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I knew that was coming. I figured it's probably going to happen this weekend as well, until, you know, it's just what it is. Until I get better and have more of a handle on it and people get more used to me, then instead of, oh, get this guy out of here, they're gonna be like, oh, when's Ben coming back? Always happens.
Exactly. I love it. And I know you mentioned networking. What would you say are some of your best tips for like someone like me? You know, I'm heading to my senior year of college next year. To kind of use some networking skills to try and meet new people.
I think following up is really important, a lot more important than people think. You know, if you hit someone up once, twice, over the course of a week, 2 week period, that's, you know, and don't hear back, that's one thing. 2 months, right? I would say continuously check in and try. You know, for me, I appreciate when someone's persistent because my phone, sometimes messages just get lost. Sometimes emails just get lost. And if it pops back up again, I can go, oh man, you know what? A, they put more effort in. They put more energy to reaching out and contacting me. And now I'm reminded, now I'm going to prioritize it because yes. I appreciate and respect that they wanted to follow up. If someone sends me one message and I, like, let's say, see it 2 months later and it's the only message, I don't know.
Doesn't show much,
you know? And especially if you're looking for, like, jobs or opportunities, just getting people for an intro call, you know, like I'm deeply interested in Olympic broadcasting and getting to that level. And so like on LinkedIn, messaging every person that has like Olympic broadcasting experience, just trying to set up a half hour meeting, you know, just to,
yes.
Hey, how did you get into this? What did you think of your experience? You know, those are, I guess, some quick tips, I would say, but persistence.
I think they're great tips. Honestly, yeah. You know, I've heard a lot of people say like writing a little follow-up letter is good. And when you're on social media, I mean, just line up saying, hey, thanks for the talk. Works out perfectly.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, follow-up. Can't hate that.
No, not at all. And speaking of following up, we just had a massive UFC event this past weekend. I have seen a lot of your stuff on it. I'm sure we all know all this stuff. But what I want to ask you about is what performance do you think surprised you the most out of a fighter? What performance disappointed you the most? And who do you think performed to the level we expected them to?
I would say special commendations to Diego Lopez because blowing out Sadiq Youssef in the fashion that he did, 94 seconds. When has anyone done that to Sadiq Youssef? A lot of people I saw online were thinking, oh, he's got a lack of a chin. Sadiq's going to crack him and put him down, or it's going to be this back and forth war. No. Quick, easy work for a future title challenger, in my opinion. So I would say that one was a little bit surprising. Someone that didn't show up, I felt like, I might get some hate for this, but Jim Miller and Jalen Turner, I expected a little bit more from. Jim Miller, I really wanted him to win to get that 100, 200, and 300, you know, pay-per-view landmarks under his belt. And I really felt like Bobby Green coming back after that Jalen Turner loss was going to be...
Surprised me.
Yeah, I mean, great performance from Bobby Green. He really just showed a different level, and it was tough. I felt like Jim could have used the grappling. I mean, who knows? You know, none of us are in there except for them, but it was surprising that he didn't push the grappling a little bit more, I felt. And then Jalen Turner, I mean, come on, you have the fight finished. What are you doing? You know, so it's one of those things. I get it where, hey, I want to get a walk-off KO on the biggest pay-per-view of many years. Totally understand that. But you got to get it. You know what I'm saying? You got to finish it. So, yeah, and I'll say this, like Gaethje Holloway, bro, come on, fight of the year, knockout of the year, knockout of the century. Holloway is, I'm shocked that they put him at number 9 at the lightweight rankings. That pisses me off.
I was going to bring that up to you, too, for your thoughts on that, because it just logically makes no sense how you knock out the number 2 guy, and now you're number 9 in the division.
Yeah. Like people's rationale, what I heard is, oh, we don't know if he's going to be staying at the division. It's a one-off. Doesn't fucking matter. I'm sorry. He knocked out the number 3 guy. Give him that ranking. That doesn't hold water in my opinion. And we know that he's probably going to be at 155 again, right? Mm-hmm. So that's weak reasoning to stick him below Fiziev, stick him below Mateusz Gamrot. You kidding me? Stupid.
I know they haven't gotten nowhere near the notoriety of wins that he's gotten. And I saw Aljamain Sterling. I mean, he's now number 8 in the featherweight rankings. I mean, they could use the justification. Oh, what if he's doing a one-off? You know, if they put him lower.
They could have given him a post-fight interview as well if they really wanted to. Shit was stupid.
I'll say for performances that kind of surprised me, Calvin Kattar, I really expected him to capitalize with his striking beforehand. But I mean, it was just Aljamain pressure upon pressure upon pressure. And look, I didn't even recognize the Calvin Kattar I saw.
What's crazy, when has he faced a stylist challenge like that? When I was looking through his topology, he's never had an opponent that is going to bring the grappling that Aljamain was going to, chain wrestling like that. So I thought that as well initially. And then I went through and I was like, man, he's going to see some shit he's never fucking seen before. Mm-hmm. How is he going to respond to that? So I did pick Aljamain by decision. I think I was, I had this, okay, this is a slight pat on the back. I put out a YouTube video called the UFC 300 script where I go through and, you know, predicted each fight. I was dead on. I was so fucking dead on like 90% of them, which was crazy. Left hook from Alex Pereira, you know, TKO, Aljamain decision, Kayla sub, Figgy sub. I was like, why, how am I so fucking right, baby? It never happens. But yeah,
I actually saw on your verdict MMA, you had Max Holloway round five knockout.
Deuce, come on, baby. The thing is, Gaethje's chin has been rattled and cracked many times before. Like, let's not pretend he's got great recoverability, but durability seems to be a certain sticking point. And like, this isn't UFC 236. Holloway's not coming in here undersized taking on Dustin Poirier. He's bulked up for 10, 11, 12 weeks. And even in that fight, Dustin Poirier, who I would say is much more of a, or not much more, but a more bigger threat than Justin Gaethje, couldn't get Max out of there over the course of five rounds. So why the fuck would Justin Gaethje be able to? That was my rationale. If Gaethje slept him, and we had 1 second left, let's not pretend like, oh, the KO was, I saw it coming, like came out of nowhere.
No, I think for a lot of these fights, my issue for picking is that I base it off of their last performance. And I kind of forget to look at, okay, maybe 5 years ago they fought a guy that was sort of similar, such as like the Aljamain Sterling Calvin Kattar, where he had not faced anyone like him before. Where I'm looking at, oh, he was fighting Arnold Allen, who's only striking him.
Yeah, I pick off my heart. I don't do any research. No, I do. It's 50-50. 50-50.
Picking off the heart, how do you feel about Charles Oliveira losing the split decision?
It's tough. It's very tough. You know, and this was a fight that I didn't get to watch. Of course, I was broadcasting while the event was going on, so I missed most of UFC 300, which that was a bummer. But yeah, I saw the highlight of the guillotine, and that was so fucking tight. Like, if Armin didn't slip out of his shorts, I think we could have seen Charles Oliveira sub. But you know, is what it is. I don't think Charles's stock drops much. It's a loss, but it's a split decision to the now number one contender. You know. A rematch over five rounds, I think, would be really exciting. And who knows? Like, now you could do Charles and Holloway. Now you could do Charles and Gaethje, too. Like, who wouldn't sign up for that fight? That was a super fun one for as long as it lasted. Injected into my veins again.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe even if we're looking at it from a divisional point, I mean, him versus Matheus Gamrot could be another stylistic matchup. But I don't know if that brings as much excitement.
It doesn't. And like, that's Gamrot's style. Like, I don't want to knock the guy, but you know, when you just wrestle fuck RDA and wrestle fuck every opponent, I'm sorry. I just have a different preference for what I enjoy viewing. Holloway and Gaethje, that is the pinnacle of like the type of mixed martial arts from every element, from, you know, the leg kick attacks that just didn't pay off for Gaethje to the volume striking. And then that ending, if Gamrot showed up like that, dude, I'd be all over it. Gamrot. Yeah. But it's just the crazy chain wrestling attempts that I gotta say, I don't love, but do respect their effectiveness.
Speaking of the wrestling, you also had Bo Nicolai on verdict going into round two. What did you see? I also know you spoke to Cody Brundage. What did you kind of know that would kind of bring Bo Nickel into a second round for the first time?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I was just guessing. No, I felt like, you know, Cody Brundage had 10 more mixed martial arts bouts than him, 10 more pro MMA fights. He's had some UFC experience. And the takedowns that Bo Nickel landed against Jamie Pickett, they were off like the you know, knee into the dick.
Yes.
So I didn't feel like it was... I don't know. I felt like this was a step up. And so I viewed Nickel getting the stoppage inside the distance, but I didn't think that he'd be able to blitz through a guy like Brundage. I think correct me if I'm wrong. It was dominant. Like, I don't know if Cody had.
I think it was dominant.
Many moments. Yeah. But I was like, Cody's durable enough to hang in there until, you know, he can't, which is probably past that 5 minute point.
So do you have any name in particular you think Bo Nickel should fight next of the unranked middleweight crew?
I think Fluffy Hernandez would be a really fun clash. Mm. Yeah, give me that. Give me that all day long. I think, like, Bo is nowhere near ready enough for a Chimaev or, like, a top 15. But I think if you keep giving him top 30 guys, maybe he gets to, like, 9-10-0. That's when you can really fast track him maybe through the rankings. I would prefer to see him take another 2 years of just cleaning out some of the bottom guy, not bottom guys in the division, but bottom guys in that top 30 before we see him lose. I don't want to see Bo Nickel lose. Now, this might be a controversial point, but like that could be a huge future star. I think he's got a lot of good ingredients. Kid's got great ingredients. He's developing. So I don't want to see him lose unless it's at a pretty pivotal moment. If he loses to somebody outside the top 15, Fizzle's gone. That's a, you know, everyone's going to feel like, let down.
Yeah.
You know, but if he loses to someone like Chimaev for the belt, different story. I think we're all going to be like, man, let's see that one again, you know?
Yeah. I was thinking maybe a name like Edmund Shabazian, someone to test his striking a bit more. But then I kind of think
he's going to fuck Edmund up. Yeah, he's going to kill Edmund. I don't want to see Edmund fight grapplers, man. I had to sit through the Brunson fights. I had to sit through, you know, give Edmund just fun strikers and let him do what he does best.
The fluffy fight annoyed me. I was kicking myself. Edmund would rock him with some, just take him right down.
It's terrible. You would think like, and that, I think that's the common thing from the fans' perspective is like, you would think that these guys would have one fight where they get wrestle fucked and then be like, man, I gotta shore up that hole. That's all I'm going to be doing. But I think it does illustrate how hard it is to master some of these disciplines. Like you just can't get good at wrestling over the course of a year and a half, 2 years. You know, like it takes so much time. And I don't know. That's what makes, for me, that's what makes guys like Volkanovski special, where you just see levels in development. And while I think that I don't want to say the career's done, but
it's so tough to say.
It is. Yeah, I don't think he's going to beat Ilya Topuria ever. But like, let's say Volk goes to 155. I think there's some fun fights. I think he still beats most of 145. But yeah, Volk's skill set, like people are going to clown him for that loss for the rest of his life, but. He is one of the top pound for pound fighters ever.
Mm-hmm. Final point for 300. Who do you think should be next for Alex Pereira, and when do you think he'll be fighting next?
So unfortunately, I heard that the broken toes, he had a broken toe coming in and then he broke a toe in the fight. So UFC 301 in Rio is not going to happen, which is, it's fucking tough. He wanted it. The fans wanted it. That card wanted it. I mean, we needed one more for that card, man. No disrespect to my guy, Steve Ersig.
No, not to Steve at all.
So I think Alex Pereira and maybe Magomed Ankalaev makes sense. Ankh's, he's been up there. I think he's got pretty low fight IQ, admittedly. No disrespect, but like you have some of the best grappling in the division. Why are you eating leg kicks from Jan Blachowicz for 5 rounds? And then, oh my God, when I can barely stand, now I remember that I can wrestle and get a 10-8. Yeah, he could have been champion. Magomed Ankalaev could, if he did that in round one, he would have gotten the belt, you know? So I think that fight next makes sense. But honestly, call me crazy, but I would like to see Adesanya and Alex Pereira fight again at 205. I think we've all forgotten how good Stylebender is. You know, I'm not, I think he's. His personality is questionable at times, right? So
he says weird things.
Not dick riding. I'm not dick riding at all, but I just respect the guy's grit and his style. And he has an existing win over Alex Pereira. Israel Adesanya is the lineal light heavyweight champion, if you view it from those boxing metrics, right? Mm-hmm. So I think if you give Alex the chance to really close the door on that rivalry, you give Adesanya the chance to even it out and get a light heavyweight title that's always escaped him. I feel like the story's there. The story's excellent. Who the fuck wouldn't buy Pereira versus Adesanya too? Who else can stand with Alex Pereira? I think it's just Adesanya. And even then, I mean, it's... You know, it's not like he did it effectively sometimes, but, you know, he did it better than everybody else. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't really know who at light heavyweight is going to be able to take his shots, be able to stand with them.
No. Khalil Roundtree is a name that people are curious about, and that's a fun fight. I think Khalil's maybe 2 wins away. But like, you give me Jan Blachowicz and Khalil Roundtree, and then you give me Khalil versus Jamal or Khalil versus... can't even think of Johnny Walker. I think Johnny Walker's up in the top 5 right now, right? Somehow.
Somewhere in
there. Let's double check. I don't like being wrong, baby. I don't like being wrong. UFC rankings, light heavyweight. Johnny Walker is number 7. He's right in front of Khalil Roundtree at number 8. So give me Roundtree and Walker. And when Johnny gets nuked again, then give me Khalil versus, you know, Magomed, Jamal, Jan, and then give him a title shot. That's how I would do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when Magomed does assumingly fight Pereira, I do worry, since as we saw in the Johnny Walker fight, he really leaned on his hands, that he's going to think he can stand with Pereira and we'll get another round one knockout or something.
It's going to be another left hook. He's going to get bonked. It's crazy. I don't understand how Padilla generates the power that he does. It genuinely is confusing. Like, if you look at that power cube, if a fan just looks at that power cube, they're not going to understand how challenging it is to get 190K on just a punch. So we did a lot of stuff with the power cube content-wise for Karate Combat. We'd have Luke Rockhold kicking it. We had Ross Levine, the KC middleweight champ, kicking it and punching it. And like their scores just were below Alex Padilla by a wide margin. Like I really am not sure. And I mean, when they fucking hit that cube, bro, it was a lightning strike. So hard. I can't even imagine you add another 60,000, whatever units it is. Like, I don't know, man. And for Jamal, like I clowned on Jamal a little bit. He clowned on me first. But I think he'll be back. Like, I think Jamal's got championship potential. His hands are very powerful in their own right. I think that there's a couple holes that he needs to focus on, but the Achilles tear, like I felt like this was too soon. He was coming back too soon from a really tough injury, and I hope that now he's going to take all the proper time, get his body to 100%, get the mind to 100%, and come back stronger. He's got fun fights in front of him, and like I said, he's still one away from a title shot.
Mm-hmm. So you're the matchmaker. You get to call the shots. What are you doing with Jiri and Jamal? Who are their next two opponents and where?
Oh gosh, so I think Jamal and Krylov might be interesting. I know Nikita's on a pretty solid tear. He's number six. Jamal's number three. Jiri and Magomed, they haven't fought before, have they?
No, they have not fought yet.
No, I think that'd be an interesting one just to solidify a number one contender, because obviously Alex is going to be out for a period of time with those toes and getting everything situated. So if you do Jiri and Ankh in maybe June, July, then you can run it with Alex later in the year, maybe on that October. Aren't they doing Yas Island again in October? Is that what I saw?
Yes, 309, I think it is, 309.
Interesting. Well, I think that makes sense. And then again, that'll give Khalil Roundtree enough time to make his way up.
Hey, so I'm here for it. I'm here to see anyone rise up in that division.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then, without doubt, there were at least three more fights that I wanted to get your opinion on, and those were the three big ones from Dana White. So what do you think about those announcements? We'll start co-main event, 302, five rounds. Sean Strickland, Paul Costa. Is that the right fight to make for those two at the moment?
I think it is the right fight. I want to, before I even break these down, address the fact that they did it as a complete anecdote in the post-fight presser, which I felt was the dumbest thing of all time. Quite in the same category of not giving Aljamain Sterling a post-fight interview. Why not integrate this into the show? Why not have Connor and Chandler face off in the octagon, right? Have an Undertaker, lights go black, then it comes up, they're in there, bro. The pop would have been crazy. And people, you know, people like to offer to me, oh, that would have detracted from the event. That would have distracted. We do announcements all the time at pay-per-views. They break announcements all the time on the broadcast. And it's a Conor McGregor. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think everybody in the building would have appreciated that. It would have made that event a little bit more special, dial it up a notch. And you know, I just was very annoyed that it was effectively, where's my piece of paper? Effectively this, I'm Dana, you know? All right, guys, so gate was about $16 million, and performance of the night goes to Holloway. And by the way, Connor's fighting Chandler. You guys want to talk about the gloves? Let's talk about the gloves. Who's got first question? Like, that was just fucking, that's exactly what it was. It was beyond frustrating. So that's my thoughts on that. But yeah, I think Sean Strickland and Costa's a fun one. If the Costa that fought Whitaker shows up, I think he can beat Sean Strickland.
I would like that Costa in that fight.
Has to be that Costa, and that's the only time we've ever seen like that peak of Costa. So I'm not betting on it. I'm not betting on that guy to show up. So give me Sean Strickland by decision.
I like that. I honestly don't see it being finished unless maybe I'm thinking if Paulo Costa can catch him, but Sean Strickland's chin has been improving ever since that Barrera knockout. But I mean, I'll take it. I honestly thought that they were maybe gonna do Strickland and Allen just because they fought before and he had just beaten Curtis. But I will way more happily take this.
I think Brendan needs a shot down the rankings before he takes a shot up, unless it's maybe like Jared Cannonier, who's just hanging around, not doing much. Because I felt Chris Curtis won that fight. I genuinely am very confused at how it was scored for Brendan Allen. No disrespect, great performance from both guys. But you are taking on a short notice Curtis, and in many people's opinions, he beat you on the scorecards.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he should move up after that. I think he got to defend the ranking maybe a little bit, respectfully, but yeah.
No, complete understanding there. And then we get into the main event of 302, the lightweight title shot, Islam Makhachev, Dustin Poirier. I think whether he deserves it or not was out of the question, since because there was really wasn't anyone for Islam to fight. I mean, I did hear, I don't know if you heard, Armin was offered the fight after he won.
It was too quick of a turnaround. And I agree with Armin. Like, listen, that rematch has been brewing since, I believe it was Armin's debut or Islam's debut.
Armin's debut, way back in 2019.
Yeah. Yeah, so like you want a full camp to get that one back. And I think Armin and Islam has some serious potential. The only problem is it's not going to happen for the belt because Dustin Poirier is going to win at UFC 302. Give me fucking the Gilly King. I mean, come on.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I don't think that Poirier in this version is losing to many people. And yes, Islam can force the grappling and it might look very similar to the Khabib fight. I have made peace with that. But in his I believe third undisputed lightweight title shot, it's the charm, baby. Give me Dustin Poirier inside the distance. I hope he doesn't go for the guillotine because he will die. But I think that he can TKO Islam.
I mean, I love that pick. I absolutely love it. For me, I have such trouble. The first fight I ever watched in MMA was him versus Khabib. I watched it live at a Buffalo Wild Wings, Dustin versus Khabib. And I was cheering for Dustin at the time. And, you know, obviously, you know, went for the guillotine, Khabib got his back. And then I saw the Charles Oliveira fight. I saw him almost finish in round one, and he got his back, taking round three. So for me personally, I have such a hard time seeing Dustin being able to deal with Islam, who just seems to be on top right now.
This gets back to me picking with the heart. You know, I'm not picking with the brain on this one. Dustin, I just can't think of a better ambassador for the sport, a better guy that's never won the title. And wouldn't it be a very fairy tale ending for him to get gold and then lay it down? I don't think he needs to start some long reign. I genuinely think he could just lay the gloves and the belt and go, this was the last thing I needed. I got it. Goodbye.
I mean, you just wrote one of the best WWE storylines translated in the UFC. I mean,
get me in there. Give me the WWE room, man.
He submits him too. Imagine that.
Oh, it'd be crazy. If he hits the guillotine after 893 failed attempts, it would truly be the best. I mean, I'd have to give him every performance award for the year in November when they do those MMA awards. It would just be Dustin Poirier going up and down, receiving the awards. That's that's what would happen.
No, and this fight really reminds me of Adesanya and Strickland, where they kind of like, all right, we'll just put someone in against Adesanya. He should be able to win and move on. And an upset happens. So we'll see.
Let's go. Let's go.
And then 303 in the summer. It is currently booked to happen. I don't know if I'm going to believe it until they're in the octagon. The return of Conor McGregor. What are your thoughts on that?
He's back. He is back since, I think, July of 2021. It has been an extended absence for the Notorious, but it's not going to lead to victory, in my opinion. I think Michael Chandler is going to kill him. I know it's a pick him right now, minus 110, but let me contextualize my framework. Conor McGregor has not won a fight since 2016. And you're going to say, Ben, he beat Cowboy Cerrone. No, he didn't. That was a faded, old. That was the biggest layup of all time. You know what I'm saying? You know who's not? Mike Chandler, who's been doing CrossFit classes 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. every single fucking day for the last 2 years, who has gone to war with Gaethje, gone to war with Dustin Poirier, gone to war with Charles Oliveira, had everybody hurt, had everybody in deep moments. Those are the top lightweights in the world, right? So if you're going to take the competition level for Mike Chandler all the way down to a guy who is coming off of a career-ending injury, who hasn't competed in 3 years, who has been outside of the cage, whose lifestyle suggests that maybe he's not making the best decisions in what he puts in the body, right? Yeah. Why the fuck would I not bet on a guy like Mike Chandler who has nukes in the hands and we know is going to come out there guns blazing? I respect McGregor's ability to maybe have some upside in the kickboxing, and the left hand is always dangerous. But again, he's won one fight since 2016. And in the Dustin Poirier fights, I didn't see much that would build confidence against a guy like Mike Chandler, who is, again, one of the best in the world still.
Absolutely. And certainly something I've seen when I was rewatching some of Michael Chandler's fights is I've seen it in pretty much every fight except the Dan Hooker fight, because he got him out of there quickly. Is whenever he gets touched pretty bad, he is not only able to land a takedown, but hold it and just ground and pound his opponents. And if Dustin Poirier is taking you down in both fights and holding you, once Chandler gets a hold of you, I don't know how much longer you're going to be able to hang around.
Yeah. And like, that's the question is, you know, Conor is in a stage in his life where I think that he's pivoted. He's unwound that fighter brain. I don't think Mike Chandler has. And I'll say this, Mike has tread on his tires too. That's the guy who was in Bellator for many years that now is, you know, 2-3 in the UFC. Let's not pretend he's been completely immaculate. Yeah. So both guys are aged. But I just don't understand how this gets back to my same thought on Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul, where people will say to me, and it's usually idiots, Mike Tyson's going to come in there and knock him out. It's very hard when you retire professionally in 2005 and you spend 20 years doing something completely different and leading your life in completely different ways to change that and get back to who you were. I don't think Conor McGregor can get back to who he was, and he hasn't shown us that. So I think he's got a great career in Hollywood, and I think this will be the last, you know, gasp, because after Mike Chandler puts him out cold, you know, what are people going to say? Give this guy another pay-per-view? No.
I mean, already them getting this pay-per-view, both coming off of losses, I mean, is already, you could question it. Yeah. I mean, it is Conor McGregor, and I like the point where how many returns, how many comebacks can we see of McGregor? What is this now, the fifth or fourth one?
Yeah, third or fourth. It's exhausting. It's got to be exhausting. And I agree. The equalizer is the star power, and it's McGregor. And if they do Nate Diaz versus Conor, I could see that being a UFC pay-per-view headliner, win, lose, or draw against Chandler. So, you know, but at the same time, I kind of want to reward other people that are inside the promotion, that are competing against top level talent, that are, you know, earning those shots and earning those opportunities. It's kind of like, I just saw this great TikTok of The Miz shitting on Roman Reigns and John Cena. I mean, I'm deep on WWE TikTok right now. And Miz was like,
I mean, just popped,
dude, right? It's I'm telling my girlfriend, I'm like, babe, look at that finisher. And she does not understand at all. But like he was saying, I have worked tirelessly day and night, 12 years, you guys show up once every fucking 2 months and get main event of SummerSlam, main event of WrestleMania. Give it to a guy that earns it. You know, and I just don't think Conor McGregor, I don't want to say he hasn't earned it, because that'd be insane to say, but God, I feel like people have earned it more.
Damn straight. I mean, you've had Alex Pereira seven fights in like the 3 years he's been at the company. I mean, he's a definite, he's earning it.
Yeah, you know, guys like Sean O'Malley that I think are showing up, fighting the best. Yes. Like, invest in that. Dricus du Plessis, a guy who's fought everybody, who was undefeated in the UFC. I feel like we should be putting some more chips in the next generation, the next era, the next cash cows, instead of really holding on and milking this one. No disrespect, but again, I will always tune in, but I feel my interest is severely waning with each return.
Completely agree with you. Final UFC point I wanted to ask you, but before I ran out of time, who will Leon Edwards be fighting next? I don't even know who the UFC is going to go with.
Yeah. It has to be Bilal Muhammad. Genuinely, there is no other answer. As much as I like Shavkat Rakhmonov, I think that he's still got a little bit of work to do. Him and Jack Della Maddalena, that's number 3 versus number 5. Whoever wins that fight will fight after Bilal for the undisputed welterweight title shot. If anyone disagrees with me, I swear to God, I will commit so many fucking felonies. And that'll be the last gasp that they utter. That'll be the last thing they say is, no, Bilal's too bored. Boom, gone. Gone. Not playing around. Give him the shot, baby. It's too long. It's too fucking long that they've wasted Bilal's time. I don't know if he wins. I'm not gonna sit here and be like, oh, he's gonna destroy Leon. It's a back and forth bout. I feel Leon has passed this grappling test before, you know. But Bilal TKO'd Sean Brady. What did Sean Brady go out and do next? Dominated Kelvin Gastelum and finished him. Right, so let's put some fucking respect on Bilal. He doesn't need to fight Shavkat. He doesn't need to fight you know, a Colby. Give him the shot. If he loses, then you all win, you know.
And I mean, I was definitely a Bilal hater. You know, I'll admit it. I was not on the Bilal train, but then he beats Wonderboy. Then he beats Luque. Then he beats Brady. Then he beats Gilbert Burns. And you're almost like, okay, you cannot deny him no matter what an opinion of him may be.
Exactly. I feel like, you know, if we want to compare ourselves to the NFLs, the MLBs, the NHLs, then we have to view things a little bit more like a meritocracy. Who's earning it? Who is actually the best in the world? And Bilal mm-hmm. Muhammad has beaten guys that, you know, Gilbert Burns is one of the top in the world. And, mm-hmm. you know, we didn't have a chance against Bilal Muhammad. So I just don't, you know, I understand it. You know, he maybe isn't the most exciting guy. He's the nicest dude ever. I've worked APFC shows with him. I've had the pleasure of calling events next to him. He's the nicest fucking guy. But I can understand some people. I can't shit on grappling earlier of Mateusz Gamrot and then turn around and be like, oh, but I love Bilal. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't want to, you know, sound too hypocritical. And again, personal bias injected into this one. But yeah, it's Bilal's time and is what it is.
Absolutely love it. One last point before I leave you go. Ben the Bane Davis, 4 months into 2024. What are your goals for the rest of this year? What are some of the big ones?
Win a fight, man. I got to get the hand raised. I've lost too many times. It is not frustrating to me because, you know, I don't define myself as a competitor. It's not something that I'm truly gunning towards, but getting my hand raised is absolutely a goal this year. And I am taking the easiest matchup of all time to do it. I will get a trash can and I will knock them out. And everyone's going to be like, he had a record of 2-83. And I'm going to be like, yes, he did. You're damn right. He did.
But I got those two wins. That's what
he got those two fucking wins and I got my hand raised. So that's all that matters. 2024, getting the hand raised and then continuing the broadcast. I'm booked out until December. So it's already year is almost predetermined for me, which is nice. It's great. That's a beautiful problem to have that I didn't have a year or 2 years ago. But so just keep on keeping on, you know, hopefully mm-hmm. the Twitter grows and everything scales and more opportunities come.
I mean, it's looking great. I've been seeing it grow. I've been so excited to see. I mean, 38K, what an achievement. So 100K will be here before you know it.
Yeah, I'll probably be dead before then, but who knows?
Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been amazing. I've learned so much, especially from someone in an industry that one day I aspire to potentially get into. And, you know, anything else you want to leave us with?
Nah, man, to anyone that, again, wants to do either what I do or anyone else does, just keep grinding. Like, it's not a road that's short. It is long and there are many twists and moments where you'd want to lay the cards down. But my inner monologue has always been, you know, A, there's someone working harder than me. There's someone mm-hmm. that's, you know, oh, they are going to wake up and do this. And I want to sleep in, right? There's someone always working harder than you. And, you know, how much do you want it? How bad do you want it? I could have stopped so many times. I've been fired from like 5 or 6 different media gigs. I told you about that Tarps Off experience. That could have been a great time for me to be like, you know what, maybe this isn't for me. This is crazy. So not stopping and not accepting failure. You're gonna fail. You're gonna fucking fail. Mm-hmm. Not accepting, that's the key. Pushing forward, learning from it. That's where success comes from. It's not gonna come overnight and it's not gonna come out of nowhere.
No, and you're a perfect example of that. I love that. That's a great mindset. Well, everyone, you can find Ben Davis on all of the social medias. I mean, YouTube, Instagram, X, TikTok at Ben the Bane Davis. Ben, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.